The following resource is from Christ Community Church. For more information, please visit lovinglord.org.
Lord, I pray that you would help us worship you well during this part of our service where we come before you and seek to hear your word and understand what you have to say to us and then be transformed by it. I pray, Father, that you would help us do that right now. By your Spirit, help me to preach this passage well. By your Spirit, help us to listen to this passage well. And please, Father, let our hearts and minds be shaped by you this morning. Cause us to walk out of here with your perspective on history. Let your word cause us be the means by which, the lens through which we interpret both the past, the present, and the future. And I pray, Father, that you would cause us to be rightly impacted in our hearts, in our minds, and in our lives by the truth that we're going to consider this morning, which is that you are sovereign over history. I pray, Lord, that this would go deep into us and permeate our way of thinking and feeling about the world, and that you would do this for your glory and out of your love for each of us as well. It's in your name we pray. Amen. All right, let me tell you a little bit about why I'm preaching on this passage this morning. I was actually supposed to preach several weeks ago when it was going to be this, it was actually supposed to be the Sunday after the election back in November. That was when I was planning to preach this passage. And for various reasons, sickness with Pastor Keith and the sermon that he was going to be doing at the church plant that we're supporting in Santa Cruz, I ended up not preaching that Sunday, but this passage was picked assuming that it was going to be the Sunday after the election. And that said, even though it's not the Sunday after the election anymore, it's still a very appropriate passage for us to consider looking back now on the election, on the outcome, and looking forward next month to the major transition of power that we're about to experience as a country and whatever that means for our future as a country. I think it's safe to say that the election we just experienced will go down as one of the most consequential elections in modern American history. There were so many issues at stake in the election, from abortion to immigration to the economy to how our current administration would respond to serious developments on the global stage. And looking back on it now, we know the outcome of the election and we have an idea, getting a better idea over time of what this might mean for the future, as more information comes out about people that Trump's electing or nominating to positions within his administration. But looking back on it, I think it's interesting as a Christian to ask why we experienced the outcome we experienced. And of course, there are many answers that you'll find to that question. If you're listening to the news or political commentators, you might hear people talking about how qualified Kamala was as a candidate in the election. You might hear people talking about the American people's dissatisfaction with the current administration. You might hear a conversation about whether the left's agenda pushed too far for the majority of Americans to get behind their platform. You can give all kinds of political and social reasons for the outcome that we just experienced. But as a Christian, the Bible offers a more ultimate explanation for the major political event that just took place and that we're going to be experiencing the repercussions of now over the next several years. And that explanation is a very simple explanation. It's actually a one-word explanation. And that one word, of course, is God. God is the reason we just experienced the outcome that we witnessed last November. And surprisingly, or perhaps not surprisingly for you, had the outcome been different, had Kamala won, and say had the Democrats taken the Senate, that would still be the ultimate explanation for the outcome. The explanation would have been the same, that it was God. The main point for the sermon today is a very simple point, and it's kind of a cliche point, but it's that history is his story. Now, I didn't come up with that phrase. That's been around. I don't know who came up with that. I know it's kind of a trite Christian saying, but it's actually a good saying, and it's going to be the main point of the sermon today. I think it's a great main point in light of the truth that we see here in Daniel chapter 2, that history is his story. In other words, this movie of history is not an open script. There's somebody who's writing the screenplay for this. There's somebody who's directing this movie. There's somebody who's producing this movie. Somebody, a real person in some ways just like you and me, that's actually behind all of this. We're going to look at two questions today. The first question is, who is making this movie? And the second question is, what does that mean for you and me? So two questions, who's making this movie? And secondly, what does it mean for you and me? Let's consider the first question first, who's making this movie? James Cameron is probably one of the most famous filmmakers of our time. You might know him for movies like The Terminator or The Titanic, which won, 11 Academy Awards, Best Picture. He won Best Director for that as well. Before Avengers Endgame came out in 2019, the movie Avatar was the highest grossing film of all time. And James Cameron wrote the screenplay for that film. He directed that film, and he was the main producer for that film. It's safe to say that he was the primary creative force behind Avatar, one of the most successful movies of all time. If you remember that movie, that was the one with where the humans were on the alien planet, and there were all the blue aliens that they were able to create an alien body of that he could transfer his consciousness to, and there was a battle between the humans and the aliens. It was called Avatar because they're transferring their consciousness to another body. That's the movie. Most successful movie of all time in terms of it being the highest grossing film prior to Avengers Endgame. And James Cameron was the mastermind behind the film. He was the primary creative force behind the film. This movie that we call history also has a mastermind behind it. There is a James Cameron behind this grand story, this great movie that you and I are all part of. Now, this is an interim sermon. We're in between series. We just finished up on Ephesians. And today we're going back to Daniel, but it's not jumping into a book that we have no context with or no familiarity with, because our brother Sydney, over the past year, or maybe it's been a little bit more than a year now, I don't remember, actually preached on Daniel chapter 1 and on Daniel chapter 2. So you have some familiarity with the passage that today's sermon text is coming from. We're going to be jumping back into Daniel chapter 2, but if you remember, Daniel's such a great story. If you remember from the book of Daniel, this story is set after another major political change. In fact, I would say an even more significant political change than the one our country is on the cusp of experiencing. This is not the change that Daniel and the Jewish people were experiencing. It was not like a unfavorable outcome. If you were unhappy with the way the election went here, that's not like the kind of political change that they were experiencing. What they were experiencing would have been more akin to Russia invading the U.S. and deporting some of our most famous citizens to Russia and reprogramming them culturally to be of service to the Russian people and taking them away as an asset for the American people. That would be much more like the kind of political change, major political change, that Daniel and some of the other Jews at that time were experiencing. See, in 605 BC, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, the wicked, big, bad Babylonian Empire, besieged Jerusalem, and after the city fell, they deported some of the nobility and some other members of the royal family from Jerusalem to Babylon. And Daniel was one of those who was deported. And once they were in Babylon, if you remember from Sydney's sermon, they underwent a form of cultural reprogramming. They learned the language and they learned the literature of the Chaldeans. And we saw Daniel's prudence in picking an area that he could resist their reprogramming efforts on. He picked the diet, which for us might seem kind of like a strange thing. Like, why would you want to give up the king's great food and wine for vegetables? But for Daniel, it was a way that he could resist their reprogramming efforts. And he's set forth as a good example of faithfulness to God in the midst of a foreign nation that's in the context of being in exile in a foreign land. And then in Daniel chapter 2, we have the amazing story that sets the context for our passage today, where King Nebuchadnezzar, in his sleep, has a dream. And it's not a good dream. It's a dream that leaves him quite disturbed, actually. He's very troubled in his spirit after this dream, and he's not able to sleep. You can imagine him getting out in the morning. He's got black rings around his eyes, and he calls everybody that could possibly help him with this dream into his presence. He summons all the wizards, all the sorcerers, all the astrologers, all the Chaldeans into his presence, and they're all standing before them, and he tells them, I had a dream, and you need to help me with it. And of course, they respond by saying, O king, let us know what the dream is. That way we can interpret it for you. And Nebuchadnezzar says, no, that's not how this is going to work. See, I've made a decision, and it's a firm decision. I want you to tell me what the dream was, and then I want you to tell me what it means. And if you don't, I'm going to have you torn limb from limb. And so all the wizards, all the astrologers, all the wise men of Babylon, they're standing there and they say, they respond to him again. They say, King, tell us what the dream is, and then we'll give you the interpretation of it. And King Nebuchadnezzar replies, he says, I see what you're doing. You're just trying to buy time here. My decision is firm. Tell me what the dream was, and then give me the interpretation. That way I can know you're actually giving me the right interpretation. And all the wise men respond, saying, King, what you're asking is impossible. No one can do this for you. The only ones who could possibly do this are the gods, and they dwell in heaven. Their flesh is not here on, they don't dwell with flesh like us. This enrages the king, and in his twistedness, he orders that all the wise men of Babylon be executed. He orders that all of them be put to death. And of course, Daniel and some of his friends were among the wise men that were to be put to death. And right about when this is about to happen, as the execution squad is going out to gather, to round up the wise men and to kill them, Daniel comes face to face with Arioch, the captain of the king's guard. And he asks him, what's the reason for this hasty decision on the king's part? And Arioch tells him what's going on. Daniel says, let me go into the king and ask him for time. Just give me a chance to see if I can find out what the dream was and what the interpretation is of it. And so he goes into the king's presence. The king grants his request. And then what does Daniel do? He goes back to his friends. He asks his friends to pray to the God of heaven. And God reveals to Daniel what the dream was and what the dream means. And it's amazing that before Daniel, the book, tells us what the dream was, we get this prayer of praise from Daniel to God. I'm going to read it to you. And this is the passage that our sermon text comes from today. God, after sharing the dream and the meaning of it with Daniel, like a friend shares a secret with another friend, revealing something secret, sharing it in confidence with him, Daniel says in Daniel chapter 2, this is verse 20 if you want to follow along in your Bibles. Daniel says, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. Then Daniel goes to Arioch, the captain of the guard who had been sent out with the execution squad to kill all the wise men of Babylon, and he says, let me speak to the king. And he goes back to the king, and he tells the king the dream that he had, and he offers an interpretation of it. And the dream makes more sense of this prayer of praise that we just had a chance to hear Daniel read. Because if you remember, this dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, it was a very interesting dream. In this dream, he saw a huge statue, a giant statue, and it was super bright, and the text says it was frightening. It was terrifying to behold. And the head of the statue, I'll read it to you, this is verse 32, the head of this image was of fine gold, its chest and its arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, and its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and clay. And Daniel later explains to the king that these different parts of the statue represent different kingdoms. You're the head of gold, and there's going to be another kingdom after you, another kingdom after that, another kingdom after that. And then what's represented in the vision as a stone being cut out, not with human hands, it's going to come, it's going to smash all of these kingdoms that Nebuchadnezzar sees in his dream, and that stone is going to become a mountain that fills the entire earth. Daniel says all of these kingdoms are going to be displaced by God's kingdom, and God's kingdom is going to be, it's going to fill the cosmos, and it's going to last forever. Nebuchadnezzar, scholars argue over which kingdoms it was that he was seeing in his visions. Some say that, obviously the first one is Babylon, and then some say after that maybe it's Media Persia, and then after that Greece, and then after that Rome. Some say that it was after Babylon, that it was the Medes, and then the Persians, and then Greece. Either way, the outcome is the same. All these earthly kingdoms are smashed to bits. They're blown away like chaff in the wind, Daniel says, and they're replaced by God's kingdom forever. It's amazing. In verse 21, makes more sense now in light of the vision that Daniel shares with Nebuchadnezzar and then explains. Look at verse 21 again. In verse 21, Daniel praises God as the one who changes times and seasons. He removes kings and he sets up kings. Makes more sense in light of what the vision was actually about, right? One kingdom displaced by another kingdom, displaced by another kingdom, displaced by another kingdom. God's the one behind it. God's the one removing kings and setting up kings. He's the one who's changing times and seasons. Now, obviously, he changes times and seasons in a literal sense. He's literally the one that changes winter to spring, and spring to summer, and summer to fall, and fall to winter. He's the one that changes the seasons in a physical sense. But some take this to be metaphorical, that he's the one that changes, as one put it, the epochs and eras of human history. The epochs and eras of human history, God's the one who's changing them in and out, changing them in and out. He's removing kings and setting up kings, removing kings and setting up kings, just like we see him doing in the vision that Nebuchadnezzar had. He has knowledge about what will happen, but it's not just foresight. It's not like God has access to the script, and because he sees the script, he knows what's going to happen in this movie. The view of Daniel here is that God knows what's going to happen because he's the reason it's going to happen. He's the ultimate explanation for it happening. In Daniel's mind, God knows what's going to happen because he's the script writer. He's the director of this movie. He's the producer of this movie. He knows what's going to happen because he's the mastermind behind this film. So of course he knows what's going to happen in this film. He is the James Cameron, you could say, of this movie we call history. Verse 22, he's controlling times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. That, by the way, is true not just of the kingdoms in Nebuchadnezzar's vision. That's true of all of the eras and epochs of human history. And if you see this movie structured in terms of major political events, as one person talked about, history here might be viewed as being structured in terms of major political eras. This movie that's structured this way is structured this way because God has structured it this way. That's true of Babylon, that's true of Greece, that's true of Rome, and that's true of all empires, all kingdoms that have been raised up on the world stage and brought down on the world stage throughout history. How many kingdoms have come and gone? How many nations have come and gone that God's raised up and then disposed of? Can think of the Byzantine Empire with a great emperor like Constantine, raised up, it's come, and then it's gone. You can think of the Mongol Empire with a leader like Genghis Khan, raised up for a time, and then he's removed. God sets them up, and then he removes them. You can think of the Ottoman Empire with a figure like Mehmed the Conqueror, raised up, and then he's removed. Or the Spanish Empire with King Philip II, he's raised up, and then he's removed. The British Empire with rulers like King George III, he's raised up and then he's removed again. Or the Russian Empire with Peter the Great, raised up and then removed. Even more recently, you can think of the Soviet Union with a leader like Joseph Stalin, raised up for a time by God and then removed. All the leaders who are in power today are in power because of God. The reason why Vladimir Putin is the leader of Russia is because God has put him there. The reason why Xi Jinping is the leader of communist China is because God has put him there. The reason why Kim Jong-un is ruling over North Korea right now is because God has put him there. And the reason, in our country, why Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the United States is because God has put him there. The only reason a king ever comes to power, the only reason a kingdom ever rises to power on the world stage is because that power was given to them by God. That's the language that's used. It's given to them. Given to them by God. This comes from later in Daniel, if you want to read Daniel chapter 2, verses 37 through 38. It says, "You, O king," speaking to Nebuchadnezzar, "the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, and the might, and the glory, and to whose hand he has given, wherever they dwell, the children of man, the beasts of the field, and the birds of heavens, making you rule over them all, you are the head of gold." He tells Nebuchadnezzar, God has given you all of this power. He's made you ruler over all of these things. This power that Nebuchadnezzar has, and he was a very powerful man, very, very powerful man, had been given to him by God. God was the one who set him up, who raised him up. And it's fascinating when you think about this, because people throughout history have come to power in all kinds of different ways. Sometimes people come to power in the form of a coup. Sometimes they come to power by means of a military victory. In our country, they come to power by means of a democratic process, by means of an election. Here, just a few weeks ago, we had over 150 million people voting in the election to determine the outcome that we witnessed. 150 million people involved in this process that ultimately resulted in the exact outcome God determined. How is that? Because God is working sovereignly through all of these historical processes to bring into power the people that he so chooses and to take people out of power that he so chooses. He removes kings and he sets up kings. He's the one changing the scenes of this movie, structuring the plot, if you will. In his victory speech on election night, Donald Trump said this. He said, quote, "I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America." I don't know if that's true. I don't know if we are on the cusp of a golden age. But if we are, it will be because God brought this era into being. It's because he's structured the plot for this golden age to take place. If it's not a golden age, if instead we end up in World War III and I'm not here in a couple years because I'm fighting in a battle overseas with some of you, that will also be because God structured this era, this epoch, into human history. It's because he wrote that plot. Trump also said, quote, "Many people have told me that God spared my life for a reason, and that reason was to save our country and to restore America to greatness." I'm not sure if that's the reason that God saved Trump, but he clearly did save Trump to put Trump into power, because he's the one that removes kings and he's the one that sets up kings. The reason Trump is in power is because God put him in power. And the same would have been true if he had not ended up in power. God would have been the one putting Kamala in power. He is the ultimate explanation for every major political event in human history, including the ones that we just experienced last month. Now, this is not a complicated point. I think we all grasp what this means, at least on an intellectual level. But it is an absolutely stunning point to contemplate, I think, that he is the one, this person is the one that's setting up kings and removing kings. That there's somebody actually doing this. That's an amazing thought. A real person doing this right now. This movie of history has a real director, a real producer, a real screenwriter, and he's the one calling the shots. The primary creative force, the mastermind behind this film. And interestingly, this director, this screenwriter, has leaked the plot or part of the plot to us. He leaked it in the vision to Nebuchadnezzar, and he leaked it in the rest of his script that we call the Bible. And that plot involves all the kingdoms of this world, Babylon, Media Persia, Greece, Rome, all the way down to today, all the kingdoms of this world being smashed to bits, blown away, and ultimately replaced by his eternal kingdom. Real kingdom with a real king on earth. If you looked at the service preparation questions that I had sent out this week, one of the questions there was, in what ways is America similar to the nations or the kingdoms described in Babylon's, in Nebuchadnezzar's vision? And by that, I wasn't trying to make some weird prophetic point about, you know, like one of these representing America or something like that. But America is similar to all of these other kingdoms in one very important way. It too must be smashed to bits. And that might sound kind of like a weird thing for us as Americans to embrace. You know, a lot of us take pride in our country. We think about how mighty, how powerful our country is, one of the most powerful nations in the history of the world. But America, like Russia, like North Korea, like China, like all kingdoms, all empires throughout history, must come to an end. It must ultimately fall to God's eternal kingdom. All kingdoms must fall to his eternal kingdom. That's the plot. It's been leaked already. The one who's writing the script for this movie has shared this with us. All of it must fall to him. Who is this screenwriter exactly? If you look at verse 23, Daniel calls him something interesting. He calls him the God of my fathers. He says, to you, O God of my fathers, in verse 23, God of the fathers, God of Daniel's fathers is the one who is changing times and seasons. He's the one who's removing kings and setting up kings. The God of his father, of course, is the God of Abraham. It's the God of Isaac. It's the God of Jacob. It's the one who made a covenant promise to the patriarchs to bless him, to make him into a great nation, to bring blessing to the world. He's also the same God that delivered the Israelites from their oppressors in Egypt and led them out through Moses. And he's the same God who is the creator of heaven and earth. He's the God of Genesis 1, the God who gave the great silverback gorilla its strength and the massive blue whale its size, and the eagle its ability to fly, and the cheetah its incredible speed. He's the same God that lit the core of the sun on fire, burning at 27 million degrees Fahrenheit this moment as we speak. He's the God who put the estimated sextillion stars in the universe. That's one followed by 21 zeros. In light of the New Testament, we know that he's the same God, the same God who has written an incredible twist in this plot of his, this plot of the movie of history. He's the God that cast his own son in the role of the Savior and of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He's the God whose son actually became a human being, a baby, as we're going to celebrate in a few weeks for Christmas, born into humble, lowly conditions in a manger, and then died at the hand of oppressive rulers, the Jewish authorities and Pontius Pilate, crucified, executed in brutal fashion, barbaric fashion, to make atonement for the sins of his people, and then resurrected on the third day, reigning now as king over all. It's the same God, the God of Daniel's father, the God of Daniel's fathers, the God of the Old Testament, the God of the New Testament, that's revealed himself in Jesus, that is the God who's changing times and seasons, removing kings and setting up kings. He's the one that's the mastermind behind this film, the writer, the director, the producer of history. Do you see history through that lens? Do you see the election through that lens? That this is all part of the masterminds of this film's plot? Do you see the future through that lens? Whatever comes with the major transition of power our country's going to experience next month, it's all at his hand. He's the primary creative force behind this film, the James Cameron of this movie. Behind the scenes, all of this is his doing, written, directed, produced by him. History is truly his story. That's not just a cliche, it's really true. History is his story. So I hope it's clear. We've seen the answer to the first question is clear. We've seen who's making this movie. It's the God of Daniel's fathers. It's the God of the Old and the New Testament. The God we call Yahweh that's revealed himself through Jesus. Now, what does this mean for you? That's the second question I wanted to ask. The first was, who's making this movie? We've seen that clearly, I think. The second is, what does this mean for you? What does this mean for you? I'm going to give you three P's. They're all going to be P's so that they're easier to remember. The first P is praise. See, Daniel, he praises God in Daniel chapter 2 for answering his prayer. Right? He asked God to reveal this mystery, this thing that was in darkness. What was the king's dream? What did it mean? And he was asking this because his life and the life of his friends was literally on the line. God came through. He answered his prayers. He saved Daniel. He saved his friends. He actually saved all the other wise men of Babylon too. And so that's why Daniel is praising God. He was praying for deliverance, for salvation, for God to reveal this thing, and God did it. And so he's praising God there. And in his praise, he acknowledges God as the writer, the director, the producer of this movie we call history. And in our hearts, I think it should inspire praise too. It should inspire adoration too, although perhaps for a different reason than Daniel. We're not praising him because he saved us from Nebuchadnezzar's crazy decree to execute all the wise men. But this truth in Daniel's prayer, I think, should inspire praise in our hearts too. I just want you to think of this for a second. Think of how amazing this is for a second. I know I've talked about this already briefly in the sermon today, but I really want you to just pause on this and let this hit home with all the force that it should. Somebody, a real person, verse 22, removes kings and sets up kings. That's amazing. Just think about that for a second. Think of a real person being behind history. All of human history, there's a real person behind. There's someone actually making this movie. Not only that, according to Proverbs 21, verse 1, it says, the king's heart is a stream of water in the hands of Yahweh. He turns it wherever he will. God is the one who sets up rulers and removes rulers, and he's the one that holds rulers' hearts in his hand. The image here is probably of an irrigation canal on a farm, and farmers are able to manipulate the canal to change the flow of the water in this direction or in that direction to water crops here, to water crops there. That's the way a king's heart is in God's hands. He's able to change the direction of the irrigation canal, cause it to go this way, cause it to go that way. That's what Donald Trump's heart is like in God's hand. That's what Kim Jong-un's heart is like in God's hand. That's what Vladimir Putin's heart is like in God's hand. And every single ruler throughout history, God holds their heart and their mind in his hands and is able to turn it wherever he will, like a farmer turning irrigation canals wherever he will. Amazing. That is an amazing thought. And if you don't feel like it's amazing, I just want you to imagine for a second what it would be like if you were God. Can you imagine what it would be like to have that power? To say, Biden out, Trump in. To say, Byzantine Empire, gone. Ottoman Empire, gone. Soviet Union, gone. Imagine you, personally, having that power. Being in God's position. It's an unbelievable thought. To have the power to put kings in place and take kings out. To raise nations up and to take them down. One single person has that power and is doing that today. And has been doing it now for the past several thousand years. This is a movie that actually has a maker. A screenwriter, producer, director, you name it. Amazing. Whatever you think of the outcome of the election or any other outcome in the future that we experience as a country, this is a truth that should inspire praise in your heart. Because it's mind-boggling. The greatness of God, the awesomeness of God, displayed in his complete control over history, is absolutely breathtaking. And if you contemplate it, even just for a minute, if you just let this thought kind of sit in your mind, it'll shake you. It'll make your legs start to quake. Right? It's kind of like hearing the sound of a great thunderstorm or hearing a mighty wave come crashing down. It's just, there's so much might. There's so much power there. Complete control over history. The one who brings kings into power. That's a real person. And that real person is God. I think it should humble us, put us in our place, right? In Psalm 2, the psalmist actually puts all the kings of the world, all the rulers in the world on notice. He says, this is reading from the NRSV, verse 10, from Psalm 2. Now therefore, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve Yahweh with fear, with trembling. Kiss his feet, or he will be angry, and you will perish in the way, for his wrath is quickly kindled. If you're a king, if you're a ruler, if you're Donald Trump or a member of the Senate or a member of the House, you should absolutely bow your knee to the king over you and rightly fear him, because he's the one that puts you into power and that you're ultimately going to have to give an account to. That should be the case for all of us. Every single one of us should bow our knees to him in obedience. He is the king. He's the director of this thing. But not only that, I think it should move us to worship him. We should stand in awe of his greatness. We should have our breath taken away by the thought that this movie actually has someone behind it. That he is the mastermind of history. This is his story. We're going to sing to him in a little bit after our sermon. I hope that you sing with a sense of awe and wonder in your heart as you behold the greatness and the awesomeness of this one who is behind all of this, of the true mastermind of history. But the second P, I'll give you another P. Again, the first is praise. The second P is peace. Peace. I think this should be an obvious one. It's an important question to ask what this means for us, because unlike every other movie you've watched in your life, this movie of history is one that you're actually in. The great director casted you in this movie of history when he created you, when you were born. And unlike every other movie, what happens in this film is not fake. People aren't pretending. There's real suffering, real pain, real emotion, real death. This is a real life story. If the election in November had not turned out the way that you wanted, would you still be at peace? Or would you be deeply disturbed? Maybe if you would be disturbed, I think it's right for us if we desire to see a particular political outcome and there's a lot at stake and it doesn't happen, you know, it's right for us to be, it would be strange if we weren't unsettled by that at all. But would it have deeply disturbed you? Would it have rocked you? Would it have shaked you? I don't think it should, in light of this truth. I think the poignancy of this point is it's felt perhaps more, should be felt more by our brothers and sisters in countries that live in truly oppressive, under truly oppressive regimes. And when we think about our brothers and sisters in China, or even worse, in North Korea, you know, and you think about the kind of rulers that are over them that are making their life unbelievably miserable, that are causing them so much suffering. I think this truth enables Christians to be, at their foundational level, at peace, regardless with who is in power over them or how horrific of a ruler and oppressive dictator they might be. Not that they shouldn't be upset, not they shouldn't resist it even, but still ultimately, deep down, be able to be at peace with whoever's in power. Even in our own country, I mean, we're nothing like North Korea or China in terms of the oppression that we personally experience as citizens, but our own country there is so much darkness here. When you're thinking about the way things are socially or politically, whether it be with abortion or transgenderism or the false ideologies that are being propagated at large by the media and our cultural elites, there is real darkness here in this place. But all of this still, as a Christian, you can look out at, you can experience, and ultimately not be shaken by it. Because this movie has a writer, director, producer, and it's God. It's the God of our fathers. Even when your plot takes a turn for the worst. Deep down, I think, as an actor in this movie, you can have peace because history is his story. Even the darkness is part of his sovereign plan. He might not be the one directly affecting it, bringing it to pass each time, but it's all part of the story that he's written. It's all part of the movie that he's the mastermind behind. And you may not know the reasons for all the darkness, but you do know the one who does. He's all-knowing, he's all-wise, he's all-good, and this movie is in his hands. You can trust him. You can have peace, even in the midst of extremely tumultuous socio-political environments. You can have peace because he's behind it. This is such a precious truth from Daniel chapter 2. And if you're not really appreciating it, you can imagine what it would be like to not believe in a God like this. To not believe that there is, in fact, a mastermind behind this movie. To have no hope in a country like North Korea. To be a citizen there, to live under the oppression, to experience all the suffering that comes with those bad rulers, and to not have any hope, to not have any peace, knowing that there is actually someone good in control of everything that's happening here. How tragic, how heartbreaking that would be. Dale Ralph Davis, in his commentary on Daniel, he's actually making a slightly different point than the one that I'm making here, but this quote, it's just put so well and applies, I think it applies to this too. He says, "Don't be impressed with human political power, no matter how ironish it appears. Daniel 2 says, look at it square in the eye and repeat after Jesus, 'You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above.'" That's what Jesus said to Pontius Pilate. And those are the same words that you and me and every other Christian around the world can say in the face of their oppressors. "You have no power over me except that which has been given to you from above." Not only that, I think we can even have more peace in light of the ending that we just talked about earlier in the sermon. The ending that the director leaked. You know, I'm sure you probably know this, but sometimes directors actually don't tell their characters, like the actors in the movie, what's going to happen later on in the film because they want their acting to be more genuine. If you watch the Rings of Power series, that actually happened with the character who plays Sauron, because at first, it's not clear that he's Sauron. He's taken the form of someone who looks like just a, you know, like a normal person. And the actor, Charlie Vickers, playing that role, the information that he was actually going to be Sauron in the series wasn't confirmed until after filming had already started, after they had already filmed a scene or maybe a few scenes. And the reason for that was so that his reaction could be, you know, so that his acting could be more genuine. So he wouldn't be acting, you know, with the knowledge that he's Sauron and maybe make it less authentic for the film. Interestingly, God has done the exact opposite. He has intentionally leaked the ending of the script, and specifically the ending of the script for you, so that you can act differently in light of it. So that it can change the way you think and feel about everything that's going on in this movie. He's leaked the ending, and the ending is victory for you. So even when, as it does in many places around the world today, it looks like evil is triumphing. It looks like suffering, pain, death, oppression, and evil, and Satan and demons are all having their way. You know, because the director has leaked the ending to you, that they will not actually prevail. That their triumph is only superficial and it's only temporary. And that one day, all of these kingdoms will be smashed to bits and replaced by God's eternal kingdom. This ending is too good, or this quote, well, actually, let me read to you from Daniel chapter 2. This is what Daniel says in verse 44. You can follow along if you have your Bible open. Daniel, this is as he's interpreting Nebuchadnezzar's vision, says, "The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever. Just as you saw that a stone was cut from a mountain by no human hand, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold." God's kingdom is going to destroy, displace all the other kingdoms of the world and replace it on the world stage forever. I'm going to quote from Davis again. It's too good not to quote. He says, quote, "This solid assurance of the victory of God's kingdom is meant to bring a contagious certainty to the people of God, people so often squashed under the arrogant heels of earth's kingdoms and rulers. Such an immovable dogma puts iron in their intestines and nerve in their spirits as they walk through the disappointments of life and the reverses of history. They never totally despair because they know that Jesus Christ is not only the faithful witness and the firstborn of the dead, but the ruler of kings on earth." And then he says, "Don't forget what the God of heaven reveals to you through this dream, for this is a dream that will come true." It is a dream that will come true. This is a dream you want to believe in, and it's a dream that you know for certain will come true. This dream of the world's restoration and the eternal establishment of God's glorious kingdom. If you know the director, you know he's good, you know he's wise, and you know the ending that he's leaked, that all of this, as crazy as it seems and as dark as it seems at times, ends well, then I think as an actor in this movie, you can face the story ahead with peace. All the tension, all the suspense, all the apparent victory of evil, you can face with peace. Regardless of what the outcome of the election was, regardless of what the future change of power brings, it shouldn't shake you. As a Christian, you can face it with peace. All right, here's the last P. The first two were praise and peace. The last one is prayer. I had to talk about prayer. I mean, it's too hard. This is such a perfect passage to talk about this again. If you were an actor in Avatar, James Cameron's movie, let's say you're concerned about a way the script was written, that a lot of your friends, a lot of the other characters in this movie are supposed to die in an upcoming battle, and you really didn't want that to happen. You love a lot of these characters. You don't want them to die. If you're a friend of James Cameron, you can go to him and you can ask him to change things. You can ask him to write the script differently. "Cameron, cause this battle not to happen. Please don't let this be part of the script. Save my friends or save me." And he can do it because he's the writer. He's the director. He's the producer. He's the mastermind of this movie. He can do what he wants with this movie. You are an actor in this movie, and you do have access to the one behind it. You have real access to the one behind it, just as you would if you were a friend of James Cameron's performing in his movie. You can talk to the one writing this script, and he can make real changes. It's an amazing thought that you can speak to the one who is in control of history, the one who changes times and seasons, epochs and eras, the one who removes kings and sets up kings, the one who took Biden out of power, put Trump in power. You can speak to him. You can speak to him, and he listens to you. Because through Christ, he's your father, and you're his child. And he turns their hearts like streams of water wherever he will. He listens to you. You can speak to him. And we need to speak to him. Because the stakes in this movie are too high not to. We have real suffering, real pain, real life and death on the line. And when we think about the current socio-political scene, we think about our country's future, we need to be speaking to him. Who knows how much our country's past and all of the previous elections have been shaped by the way God's people have been praying to him. Obviously, we can't know that. We won't know that until the end, if we ever will. But how much of what's taken place to get us to where we are today has been a direct result of God's people praying to him, and him as the screenwriter, as the director, as the producer, hearing his people's prayers and actually changing history, which is his story, in light of it. How much? We have amazing power. I think much more than we are willing to believe. Sometimes we feel powerless. Certainly we feel powerless in comparison to many of the rulers that are placed over us. We might even feel powerless in the face of the media that propagates a certain narrative that we feel like there's nothing we can do to overcome their efforts. We might feel powerless at times. But I want you to hear verse 21 one more time. God has more power than anyone or anything in the world today that ever has had power in the past or will have power in the future. Verse 21 says, he changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He puts one king in his movie. He takes him out again. Puts another king in his movie. He takes him out again. He decides who's in power, and he controls those who are in power. He has more power than anyone ever could, and you have access to him. I think it's safe to say that the one who prays to God and the one who God hears has more power than any senator, than any president, than any king, than any emperor ever has or ever could. The one who prays that God hears. Because God has power over all of them. That's an amazing thought that you, as a child of God, are able to exert a greater influence on history than the most powerful, quote-unquote, powerful figures in this story so far. Pastor Keith talked about this quote from Spurgeon in the Sermon on Prayer that we heard a couple weeks ago. It's hard to resist reading it a second time. Spurgeon said, quote, prayer is the slender nerve that moves the muscle of omnipotence. That's a great image because when you think about it, right, muscles, you can think of it, imagine a strong arm, right? It's that thin little nerve, that slender little nerve that activates the contraction or expansion of that muscle. And so you think about a huge, strong muscle flexing. It's that thin little nerve that moves it to flex. And when you think about God and all of his power, the all-powerful one, the one who removes and sets up kings, prayer is like that thin little nerve, that simple, seemingly small little string that causes his giant muscle to flex, that moves him powerfully, the ruler of history. Your prayers, that slender nerve that moves the muscle of omnipotence. History is his story. He can change it if he wants to. He can do whatever he wants with it. And he listens to you. Amazing. So why don't we pray more? Why don't you pray more? I mean, ask yourself, why are we so neglectful of prayer? And I'm a hypocrite in preaching this because I know myself. I know that I am so neglectful of prayer. Why are we so foolish? It's crazy to me that we are not praying all the time. I think we need to be more like Daniel, who is not only a man of prayer, he prayed for God to reveal this incredible enigma so that they could all be saved, and he did, right? God answered him. And I think there's something to say about him going to his friends and asking his friends to pray with him too. They were all petitioning God together. Even if we don't quite get how this works, there's something special, it seems. There's something powerful about people praying to God together, about them petitioning God together. We need to take very seriously the incredible power, even greater power than kings and rulers of this earth have access to, the incredible power that we have as God's people to actually speak to him, the writer, director, producer of this movie of history. And we need to speak to him together with each other, like we see Daniel and his friends modeling so well for us in this passage. We want to pray boldly. We want to pray together. Obviously, in our church, we have many opportunities to do that, Sunday mornings, during the week, discipleship groups, etc. So important. So, to wrap things up, Daniel's prayer of praise, it reveals an absolutely mind-blowing truth. That history is his story, God's story. Come talk to the director. We have his ear, right? As we look back on the most consequential election, perhaps, in our country's recent history, and as we look forward to whatever epoch or era awaits us, as Christians, we can interpret all of this in light of the incredible fact that God is the ultimate creative force behind this. He's the mastermind behind this movie. We know who's making it. It's the God of our ancestors. History is his story. And we know what it means for us. It means we should fall before him in praise. It means that we should face the future with peace. And it means that we should fervently seek him in prayer. Praise, peace, prayer. Let's pray together right now for that. Father, this is such an incredible truth revealed on Daniel's tongue as he praises you for answering his prayer. I ask, Father, that you would work this truth deep into our heart and mind, that it would shape the way that we look at history. It would shape the way we not only view the past, but also look forward to the future. And I pray that it would inspire praise in our hearts, that it would give us peace that's truly unshakable, regardless of the tumult socially or politically around us. And it would also cause us to come before you fervently in prayer and to pray to you together. All of this, Lord, we ask for your glory and that you would do out of your love for us too. It's in your name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. Christ Community Church is a Reformed Baptist church in San Jose, California. If you'd like more information on our church, please visit lovinglord.org. From there, you can find service times, weekly gatherings, our sermon archive, and other resources. For video content, please visit our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you again for listening.